Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can download the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. The producer of the program is George Ruggiero. He's doing another marathon Friday. He, of course, just produced the Jason and John show. Now he's here with us. Good day, George.
Good day to you. Marathon, I guess, is a decent enough word for it. Real marathon is next week, I suppose.
Yeah.
That might be teasing things.
You're going to hear a lot of George and me next week.
That we
can go ahead and say. My company, as he is, honestly, you might be hearing, I think you'll be hearing our company on Monday as well, because I think we're swapping.
More than once.
I think we're swapping around. He, of course, is normally the Tuesday and Friday guest on the program. He, of course, is Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, VSiN's college football, college basketball betting podcast, VSiN's betting tailgate show, Saturdays 9 a.m. local time, or I should say 9 a.m. central time. Check your local listings. Download the VSiN Watch app on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
I just saw something very funny.
Which is?
The Big 12 has decided to do away with their league preseason poll. A year removed from picking Arizona State to finish dead last and picking Utah to be number one, and they missed a bowl game.
That's fascinating, because normally people want the preseason poll out there, not necessarily it's just to get people
motivation.
Talking. Well, no, to get people talking. You know what I mean? Like, in the end, Ralph Russo once said this when people asked, like, why do you do an AP preseason poll when he was in charge of it? He's like, well, spirit of full disclosure, it's pretty good PR. People talk about the AP poll for about a week.
It's very true.
So is this simply because of the results from last year that it was, well, I mean, we talked about it on Tuesday. It was funny to go back and check in retrospect.
From the man himself, Big 12 ADs and coaches have decided to do away with the league's preseason media poll, sources said. Big 12 will continue its preseason all-league teams. Last year, Big 12 champion Arizona State was selected 16th. Big 12 joins Big 10 as the only conferences without a league preseason poll.
That feels dumb, right?
It's just soft. And if you're Arizona State, like, good. You picked us last. We won the league. Cool. Do it again.
I mean, I guess now it doesn't matter as much now that gambling has been such a part of the conversation that everyone knows preseason odds to begin with. But I don't know, man. Like, that's – like, who cares? Like, make the preseason poll.
I agree.
Put your name on it.
I would agree with that.
All right, I did some research, so let's tell everybody we got coming up on the program. I'm not saying it was, like, solid research, but it was something that was pointed out to me today that I want to discuss with Tim, because I think it tells us a few things about the NBA draft, and I also have some thoughts now that we've concluded the NBA draft that I'd like to share with you and see how you feel about it. So we'll discuss that. Then the head basketball coach of Washington State, David Riley, he's going to join the program. He, of course, was Cedric Coward's coach at Eastern Washington. Cedric went with him also to Wazoo. So looking forward to that conversation. Also, Tim, today as I was researching David, I know there's probably now he's the first coach that I've realized, like, oh, he's actually younger than I am. Like, there's always that weird thing of, like, can you buy the jersey of somebody younger than you? Like, what's the appropriate fan thing? That's always a weird experience when you realize, like, somebody's had multiple head coaching jobs and he's younger than you.
I was watching, I'm home alone this week, so I've been
good for you.
I've been catching up on some Netflix, that my wife has had zero interest to watch, and I just watched the Netflix doc on the Red Sox 04 comeback. And Theo Epstein was 28 when he was hired to be the general manager.
Yeah.
That sucks. I'm like, God, what am I doing with my life?
Well, that's the other thing. I guess I was reminded this week, Sam Presti's only 47, right?
Yeah, he's 47, yeah.
So that means he was like the Sonics GM at like, what, 28 as well?
He was hired as, yeah, I think 2007.
So if he was hired in 2007, he probably would have been 30. So he would have been 30. And he was going to turn 31 that November.
Yeah.
So on the Theo, he was a late bloomer at the ripe age of 30. Like he's 47. Sorry, he's 48 now. He's 48 and he's been an executive for 25 years.
Also watching that doc, Curt Schilling doesn't look great these days.
No. The years have been unkind.
Granted, he was an older fella.
Yeah,
when he got hired.
Yeah, the years have been unkind. We'll get into the list during hour number two. John Gruden's got an important campaign that I want to discuss because I'm very happy that he's taking up this issue that it's been a scourge really on football for a few years now, and it's time to actually do something about it. So I'm looking forward to discussing that. We'll also take a look at what else we got coming up this weekend. But I mentioned to you I've done some research. Okay. Not to put you on the spot, just to make you aware. Do you know how many first-round picks on Thursday night had a transaction involved with them?
Well, last night, I think everyone had a transaction.
Not quite. It was 25 of 29 for last night.
I would say, quick math, I'll say on Wednesday night, we had 11.
19 of 30.
Ah, damn.
19 of 30. So for those keeping track at home, remember, 19 of 30 usually means that's how many people are putting on the wrong hat. This means that in total, 74.6% of the draft picks had transactions attached to them. Last year, which had previously, based on my research, set a record, was 58.6% of transactions. However, a key difference, 10 of 30 in round one, 24 of 28 in round two. In 2023, 48.3% of picks had transactions. 2022, 41%. 2021, 45%. 2020, 50%. Then we start getting into roughly, like, it's in between in the years that follow. It's basically always in between 40 and 50%. So this year, we see a high jump. And my couple of key questions is, number one, what does this mean? I think this is true. I am done with all of the conversation about the, well, what about the value of this pick? You know what they're telling us, Tim? They don't value them that much. They're willing to, they're trading them like they're trading cards.
Orleans does.
Well, I mean, that they clearly, like, that's the other thing. They clearly are saying they don't value it because...
Oh, sorry, yeah. Atlanta does.
Atlanta does, but also Atlanta's kind of in this, well, I guess if you're going to give them to me, like, they're the guy that's sitting there going like, all right, well, if you're going to hand me all these cards, I guess I'll take them. But the reality is, what everybody seems to be doing is wanting to just take swings. And I don't necessarily have a problem with it, but the biggest problem is now... The NBA has decided like that they enjoy being discussed as like a financial market. And it's not really a financial market because what they've clearly told us is the thing that matters the most to them is actual players that they know that are good. That's what everyone's valuing. That's why at the end of the day, that's why Desmond Bain gets four firsts and a pick swap.
I think we've kind of been here for a little while when you think back to...
I think it's a trend for a reason.
Mikal Bridges got traded for five first-round picks last year, and he has never made an All-Star game.
Right.
And I think you're onto something when whether the Pelicans were right or wrong, and I am of the mindset when I was doing the draft show on Wednesday night, what are they doing? They believe that Derek Queen is going to be a franchise type player. And I think that's what's interesting about the draft, and the Grizzlies obviously did it too, going up five spots to get Cedric Howard. But I think there is validity to it in that when you're in that draft process, you're saying, I believe this guy is going to be a franchise-changing player. And then also, let's look at the fact here at number five. There wasn't a trade at five. And the Utah Jazz are playing a game of chicken with a prospect who may or may not show up because they're of the belief that he is such a... I don't have this source, but my gut tells me they're of the belief that they've got a elite prospect and that they were just willing to take the risk. It was a risk we were willing to take, to quote the end of Dumb and Dumber.
Well, I mean, and to that very point, I kind of respect it. It's like, all right, they kind of called the bluff.
And Utah, look, and you know, there's a couple things I want to hit on too, because I'm glad you brought up this topic from a NBA strategy standpoint, which is certainly something that you and I like to discuss. But I also think we have to talk about the product that is the NBA draft on TV. And I'm not talking
100%.
And I'm not talking about the analysts, which we can talk about, which completely needs to be revamped. But I think when you look at it from using Utah, for example, or Memphis, for example, let's go get someone that we believe can contribute. And then I'm not going to pretend to know all the ins and outs of the second apron and whatnot, but would you agree with this? It feels like to me there's more of an emphasis on finding players that can make your roster and contribute because you know you're going to have cap flexibility with these younger players at some point.
Yeah, and I also think two things. I think that is true. I think, number one, the second apron has created a hard cap. But in addition to that, the amount of money that they are allowing you to pay particular players is also going up. So you have you've got a higher volume of money in the percentage of your cap tied up into fewer guys than ever before. And what to me has been clear is, I've had this theory. I've started to wonder if in today's game right now, do we have fewer truly elite, wherever they go, they're a contender type player? I think we have. I think two things are happening. I think the eighth man now is better than the eighth man was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But I'm not sure the number one guy is better. Like, Jokic is at this level, and that's kind of my whole deal. Is like, when we do this whole, you know, who, like, where does SGA rank? Where does Tatum rank? Like, when we do all of this, I've only seen one guy right now that I go, if he's on the floor, his team's a contender, and that's Jokic. The rest of them are clearly great basketball players, but I'm not sure that they're at that other level.
Yeah, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, you got to define contender, but Giannis had an MVP caliber season, and they were the five seed and lost in five games. You know, so no, I think there's validity to it. You know, look, we do this every year, and I'm going to have, I'm sure, terrible takes. But when I saw, you know, the Indiana Pacers draft Cam Jones out of Marquette, I'm like, that dude just feels like a Pacer. Like, 4-year starter at Marquette, good shooter.
You know, he's from here.
Yeah. GP called him his little homie from Memphis, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a baller. I love him. And I just like when the Pacers draft him, I'm like, yeah, of course, that makes a lot of sense, you know? And who knows? Maybe he ends up being a G League guy. But I just like that was one yesterday that jumped out to me. But I don't know if you're done with your thoughts on just like what it is from a draft. The NBA draft as a television product, and once again, we can get into the analysts in a moment, but as a television product, just the old choose 'em up, it's borderline unwatchable. It is so confusing. Look, and this is coming from someone that loves this type of stuff. You've got to figure it out. And I know it's been going on forever, but that doesn't mean you can't change it. And last night, for example, you decided as a league and as a network, the second round is worthy of its own night on ESPN, and I was fine with it. Almost every pick was traded, and every single thing is confusing. You have no idea who's going where. I mean, you need, you know, a detective board with yarn to figure it out. It is a
I don't even know if that helps.
It is a terrible, terrible product. And I'm not even talking about the analysts who I thought last night, I'll say this, I thought last night's team should be your, for the most part, your A team. You've got Shams off doing his breaking news. That's fine. You've got Windhorst, who is pretty solid, even though he messed something up pretty significantly. He said someone traded up to get Cedric Howard, and he was obviously mistaken because that was the Grizzlies. I thought Bob Myers was solid. Jay Billis is fine. And then you had Bobby Marks. I actually thought the crew last night was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought last night was decidedly better. I also think it was a very low bar to clear. I think Thursday night was so bad that just if you just put like anything on the screen. And I think also right now, like ESPN's in this weird spot with Stephen A.
Well, where, did you see the article that Awful Announcing put out?
Yeah, I mean,
saying we need a break from Stephen A. And I'm not like you're the biggest Stephen A. hater. He doesn't bother me. I get his shtick and I understand it. But yeah, it's becoming a lot, and you don't need him everywhere. And maybe in their eyes, because he's paid so much, they feel like they have to put him on everything. But I'll say this. I was fortunate on Wednesday because I was
working. You're working? Yeah.
And I tell you what's not fun. Trying to figure out where people are going on air without having Shams narrate it for you. So I'm like, okay, I think I'm putting these tea leaves together. Okay, Cedric Howard's not going to Memphis. He's not going, you know, it's like, all right.
I did not realize until this morning when I'm doing prep work that Will Richard didn't wind up a Grizzly.
No, he's a wizard.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking Will Riley. I apologize.
No. Will Richard. The Grizzlies took him at 56 and then traded it. Maybe was that the Golden State trade?
Golden State. Yeah.
And then
they got Mayshak.
And then they end up getting Mayshak as like they're going off the air.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a couple of things that I want to discuss because. Number one, I've felt this for a while, but I think it's undeniable at this point. I don't think the NBA actually cares about their television product. I think they care about their image. And I think they care about what like clips best or like what looks and presents the way that they want to. So you wind up, they don't actually care that this is, like, say what you want about the NFL, and Lord knows I do. They do understand that the draft is a television product. I think it's part of the reason why they said, let's start going to these locales that film really well, and we've got a live audience that's into it. They understand, hey, even if a transaction is not official, we've got to announce it. People need to be able to figure out what's happening. They need to be able to follow along. The NBA, and I don't know if this is simply because it feels like more than any other organization, every executive is an attorney, and so they're worried about legal ramifications at all times, the television product 100% is not consumable. You and I work in this industry. You and I follow this. You and I, in general, like this. When you and I can't sit there and go, wait, what happened? That's on you. That's not on us. And that's the other thing that drives me insane. The NBA leads the entire league in, wait, you don't like this? Like, you're a hater. It's like, no, I'm actually trying to enjoy this. I'm trying to consume this. That's your problem. You served a bad dish. I wanted to eat at your restaurant. That's on you. Don't get mad at me when you serve up a steaming pile.
And if you want it to be, and like, to be honest, I felt like Wednesday night, as I watched, you know, the recap on with Van Pelt, I thought the moments were great when you have the true emotions of these families and what is going to be a life-changing moment. But it's so simple, man. Like, the fact that the Durant deal's not official, so we don't know that Malawak is going to Phoenix, is just silly. So you've got this dude going up on stage, a kid who learned how to play basketball when he was a teenager, and he's a top 10 pick. He's bawling his eyes out. And the most important moment of his life to date, he's wearing the wrong hat. Like, it's so simple, but you make it complicated. And I don't know. And even last night, I don't know how much. I watched the whole thing because, once again, I'm home alone. I got nothing to do. So I'm sitting there. I'm doing research for, you know, the college football pod, and I'm watching it. And you've got, you know, the number two guy to Silver coming out like an hour and a half after the fact, being like, hey, we had a trade earlier today. I'm like, yeah, we all know. You don't need to tell us. Like, what moron? Shams told us 90 minutes ago, you don't need to tell us anymore. Figure it out. The NFL figures it out. And especially, too, in the second round. The second round, you're not trading players. Like, I can almost understand the Kevin Durant thing because it's kind of weird and you're, you know, the league year doesn't start till June 6th and all of this. But I think Bobby Marks even alluded to this last night. The simple fix is what the NFL does. Free agency before the draft. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, I also think, though, this kind of goes to the point. I don't think they particularly care.
Maybe not.
Because if they did, they'd fix it. Because this is actually getting to the ESPN part of it. This is kind of a theory I've been working on. I think ESPN knows they have a problem with their NBA coverage in general. But I also think that they know they don't have the exact fix right now. And so they're just kind of riding it out and they're making sure the NBA is happy with who they have. Because I believe, somewhat informed, the NBA dictates a lot of ESPN's people on TV. Now, do they want Stephen A? I don't know. But I believe a lot of, like, in the end, they fire Jeff Van Gundy. Like, everyone can ignore it. That's what happened. They wanted Greenberg out, and they wanted Malika up there. Like, they dictate a lot of this. And I think ESPN knows they have a problem, but they don't quite know how to solve it. A lot of these people are under contract. You know, you're sitting there, who's available? Like, it doesn't seem to me like there's a new crop of up-and-comers, and you and I know it's always true. There's always talent out there, but it doesn't seem like they have enough cachet or that they want, because now it seems to me like players, when they get done, A, they've made more money than ever, but B, a lot of them are kind of in business with a lot of these current guys. Like, it's the reason why I am not optimistic about Dwayne Wade. And I did not love Dwayne during the Olympics. Like, he's in business with LeBron. Like, and in the end, like, they don't say anything interesting. Or a lot of these guys have decided, like, I want to go back into the player route, which is fine. Like, you know, the front office. And Like, that's fine, but to me, it's almost like if this is going to be the case, we need to start getting okay with the number one credential for talking about the NBA means you played in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think our best analysts almost across the board are not star players. I mean, to me, who do you think the best college football analyst is? I mean, the most notable one is Herbie. I think he's very good, and he was not a star. Played at Ohio State, massive brand. I think Greg McElroy played at Alabama, very good player, but I think his analysis is very good. I think the best analyst in basketball was Tim Legler. He's a sharpshooter who played for the Bullets, right? You know, it is like Troy Aikman is a Hall of Famer. And
there's this weird thing also in being a game analyst in that I think that is weirdly a different skill than just what do you know. So, for instance, I would like to listen. I enjoy Tim Legler in the long form, tell us your thoughts, the breakdowns. I think he's phenomenal at that. He's pretty good in games, but like, you know what I mean? Like, that skill is like, how can you articulate analysis as quickly as possible?
Well, I would say this about Legler. I'm not trying to be this Legler homer. I don't know the guy, but I believe they only put him on like a handful of games. And I do wonder if he got more reps, maybe he would become
Yeah, I do know that there was some travel issues. Now I think his kids are older, so maybe that could go away. Because it does seem like that he's possibly up for it. But like, my thing is like, you know, you run into basically two types of analysts now. It's either guys that are hell bent on promoting their own careers, like. I enjoy Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, but it feels like every time they put a microphone in front of them, it's to like elevate what they did in Boston and put down LeBron.
I can't with Paul Pierce. Like, I don't know if it's just jealousy, if he decided I'm going to be the LeBron hater. Look, the fact of the matter is, dude,
say this. I actually do kind of like it because in the end, hey, man, like, this guy was a big-time rival. We hated playing against him. We hated them. I'm not just going to make nice. Like, I'm kind of fine with that, but the problem is that's not analysis. Like, that's a character.
Right, and there's never anything right. Like, I think Charles Barkley, for the most part, can recognize he can be critical and he could be praising, right, of players. And I think that's very important.
If he can remember their name.
Which is true. But, like, for me with Paul Pierce, it's like, all he wants to do is put down LeBron, and I'm like, all right, dude, I get it. You know, you were his rival, but also it's not his fault. It's not his fault that he put up 45, 15, and 5 on you in game 6 in your house, essentially ruining the Celtics' run.
Yeah. All right, we've got to take a quick break. We'll get back into this during the second hour, but we're going to take a break because when we come back, David Riley, the head coach at Washington State, he coached Cedric Coward for a couple of seasons. We'll talk to him about Cedric and what the Grizzlies are getting with their number 11 pick, which I don't even know if it's official yet, Tim. I have no idea. I don't think it's official yet. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to David next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. David Riley's the head basketball coach at Washington State University. Go Cougs! He's also the man that coached Cedric Coward for 3 seasons. Kind enough to join us now. David, I guess let's start here. What have the Memphis Grizzlies gotten? Because this is one of the most popular draft picks that I can remember here in about 10 years being on the radio.
I love it, man. You guys are getting a great person and just a dog on the court. And he's gonna exceed expectations, I think, once he gets out there on the floor for you guys.
You know, I just, first off, When I heard the story initially about Cedric Coward and the whole process and where he started, I immediately wanted to become a huge fan because, full disclosure, I was too a D3 hooper. Unfortunately, there were no 17 point per game type of deals with me, Coach.
Where'd you play?
What's that?
Where'd you play?
Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
All right. Yeah. I played some D3 ball. I played in Cedric's League, so I like to think that if the portal was alive back when I played, maybe I could have made it too.
But I read the story, Coach, about how you discovered Cedric, because, you know, I'll quickly, I won't belabor the point here, because Duncan Robinson started at a D3 school too, and he went to Michigan, but the team that he played for, like, won the national championship. He played for one of the schools in New England. Cedric's school was not that. How did you find Cedric Coward playing D3 basketball?
I think there's just a lot of luck involved. I played in that league, so I had some, you know, I would follow it. I'd check up on it every few weeks. But really, it started his third game of his career. He was playing against my former boss, Shante Leggins at Portland, and I just turned on the game, and I was like, oh, that guy's pretty good. And then you start seeing the stats pop up every few games, and it's, you know, just kind of someone that's name we knew. And by the time that the season ended, the portal opened, we were familiar enough to know that we should do a deep dive and watch the film, and it all kind of panned out from there.
Can you help us understand Cedric's story? I've read a little bit, but is he basically the product of COVID? Because, you know, it's not often that the number 11 pick in the draft goes, you know, without a D1 scholarship offer.
I think the COVID for sure played a part in it. It was kind of just a perfect storm, right? There's the COVID. He's a late bloomer. He played on a very, very small AAU team.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the John Morant deal. Like, if that guy from Murray State hadn't gone to go eat some nachos and watch that side gym, maybe Morant doesn't get found. Like, Cedric just was kind of playing in those back gyms that no college coaches were watching. And it was also during COVID, and he was also in Fresno that was, you know, at that point was a little under recruited, I think. Just kind of a perfect storm.
You know, when you look at his numbers, obviously he dealt with the injury, you know, this year at Washington State, and he had some just monster performances in those six games. What do you think was, you know, it's impossible, I guess, to forecast, Coach, but what do you think this season would have been if he didn't get hurt? And as crazy as this sounds, because he was the 11th overall pick, does he go higher if he plays the whole season for you?
It's one of those deals where it's just, it's hard for me to think about it a little bit, because we had a really, really special team this season, and when Cedric went down, that obviously changes things when you have a lottery pick that you're kind of building around. But I think he does. Like, his shooting percentages and his shooting ability was really going to get showcased this year. He took a huge jump offensively, I think, as far as just his playmaking and his shooting. And you know, I think if this team goes and makes a run in the NCAA tournament and he has the numbers that he was on track to have, like, there's a real chance he does go higher.
Tim, they most certainly had a special team because, Coach, I'm sure you knew this because it was all over Twitter, but famously I had about a five-leg parlay on Saturday. I'm a Pepperdine grad, and my favorite thing to do is bet against my alma mater. So that game where y'all were down 7 with 45 seconds left, that saved the night. Let's just say that. Like, so that many people are saying that the Indiana Pacers took inspiration from the Cougs this year.
That was a hell of a game. That saved my night.
Yes, it was.
You know, Coach, when you think about how he projects to the next level, and obviously as Jeffrey alluded to, the excitement in Memphis, I can feel it out here in Vegas. I'm going to get to see him, you know, in a couple weeks for Summer League. But, you know, some of these players are picked on potential. From what you've gathered, he's, you know, he was one of the older prospects out there. You know, is this the type of guy that's an immediate type of impact player in the NBA?
Yeah, I think once he gets in the system and gets acclimated to the you know, the differences obviously in the NBA, he's going to take that jump right away. He's someone that you need on the floor. The way he plays, he's going to defend, he's going to rebound, he's going to knock down open shots. And so, like, you kind of look at you know, I'm not calling him Kawhi. I don't want to put any pressure on him. But like, you look at how Kawhi started his career on a really good team. He was super efficient. He played his role, and he just kind of expanded his role from there. That's kind of how Cedric's done it in college as well. Like, he came in, he was the third most efficient player in the country. He was grabbing rebounds at an insane rate. He was defending the other team's best player when he was in the game. Like, he found how he could help the team, how he could get on the floor, and then he expanded his role from there. And so I think with the Grizzlies, like, he's going to come in, he's going to have shot-making ability, he's going to rebound, he's going to defend, and then he's such a hard worker, he'll just keep taking those steps.
Coach, I believe coming into the year, it's not to say that he's off the radar, because I think I saw Vecini coming into the year, I think he said he had him around 30, 35. When did you realize that, oh, this is more than just being draftable? Like, this could be a lottery situation for him.
I would say, like, about halfway through his second year with me, you know, I tend to be pretty optimistic about my players and like, think that they have, I think a lot of them have a chance to make the NBA. If they do X, Y, and Z and get better at this and that. But like, as far as what you're saying is like climbing in the lottery and being a real first rounder and someone that can make an impact right away. You know, that was right about halfway through his second season with me. And you could just see him taking these crazy jumps every single game, every day, getting better and doing some things against really good players that were kind of eye popping to me.
Another thought that I was curious about, because obviously in the day and age that we are, you know, if you're not at Duke and your best player is available, Duke's coming calling. How much easier is it to lose your best player to the draft than having to watch him go to Duke? Because for me, it's much more satisfying.
Selfishly, I think it is cool to see your guy go directly to the NBA. But, you know, we got to adapt as coaches. And like, I've been in a situation now for the last few years where we've had guys that are draft prospects or borderline NBA guys. And I wanted this really, really badly for Cedric. And so, like, before coming to Washington State, he obviously had to hit the portal to transfer from Eastern to come with us. And there were some huge offers for Cedric, like significantly more than we could pay him on a life-changing money scale. And we had that talk, and I was so confident in his ability to make the NBA. If he's just able to showcase how good he is, I didn't want him to risk going to another system with the politics and all that other stuff. So that, you know, I feel comfortable telling him you should turn down high six figures to come back and play at Washington State, and you're going to be able to achieve your dream. And, you know, I think that was really cool to see that all actually pan out. And I wouldn't have said that if I wasn't certain about it, that's for sure.
David Riley's the head coach of Washington State, of course, the head coach of Cedric Howard for three seasons because they were together at Eastern Washington as well. What should we know about his personality? What is Cedric's personality like?
Oh man, he's a homebody. Like, he loves football. He likes to cook. He can
bake. Did I see that?
Man, he can do it all. He had the team over one time. He made wings and fries. He made enchiladas and tacos one day. He makes some red velvet cookies that are. It would get our team in trouble because we had a couple guys with sweet tooth, and so every time he made those red velvet cookies, you could see the next day a couple guys were dragging. But he can cook, and really he's just a guy that likes hanging out with his people. Like, he's obviously a hard worker. He'd be in here 2-3 times a day working out. He'd come in and watch film. But even when he was hurt, he'd be hanging by the office. He'd sit with us while we're playing in practice. He'd kind of be part of the family. And like, I think there's something to be said for that with guys that just want to spend time with their people and just a normal dude.
I don't know if Malika Andrews knew this, but when she called him Colin Cowherd, do people realize that Colin also went to Eastern Washington?
There's a lot of connections. That was pretty funny. I was at the draft, so I didn't hear it, but I had a bunch of people text me.
Yeah, that clip was, because we were just laughing at the thought of, like, if indeed, like, you know, you don't need the 3-and-D when you have the blazing 5, or could you imagine how annoying it would be to guard someone the whole time that he's just talking about, like, you know, Durant, you're top 5, but you're not really there. Like, we were just thinking, like, all the takes that you could fire that could actually probably get in some people's heads.
Hey, Cedric has enough basketball and football knowledge that he could definitely hop on your guys' show and have some good takes. You got to ask him about his, I don't know what year it was. He can name every NBA MVP back to, like, the 70s.
Okay.
Or not MVP. I think it's MVP or champion. I think it's champion. He can name every NBA champion back until the 70s. And he can rattle off the MVPs as well.
I don't know. Okay, last year would have been Jokic. Was Jokic? I don't know if I could go back 3 years.
Exactly. Now, if you get him on, you gotta talk to him about his NBA knowledge.
Now that he's with the Grizzlies, his media availability will be second. will be largely nothing. We're talking, of course, with David Riley. He is the head coach at Washington State. David, I mentioned I was a Pepperdine grad. I just wanted to get this on the record. Our school used to promote that. Apparently, Mike Krzyzewski one time said that it was the hardest place to play. And I just want to on the record that it is not correct, because playing in front of that many empty people is not actually that difficult when you go on the road.
Oh man, no, that we had to play them on senior night this year. So that was they had a good crowd that night, and they're turning that thing around. I think it'll be a fun program to watch this year.
They
made a hell of a run in the tournament. Mo Odom, how about his run in the?
It actually cost me a lot of money because I kept thinking they were going to die, because they to your point, they kept winning. But for those that don't know, the WCC tournament is rigged to where the 1 and 2 teams don't have to play but more than once. And so, like, they kept winning, and I kept thinking eventually their legs were going to die. And no, he just kept scoring. It was quite annoying.
Hey, Coach, before you run, I know you've. You're a D3 guy. Sam Presti was a D3 guy. Cedric Cowherd, D3. I think we have a renaissance, you know, proving that us D3 hoopers, we're not too shabby.
Hey, if you play D3, you gotta have a real love for the game. I mean, you really, really gotta love hoops, and I think that usually helps out a little bit.
Coach, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Go Cougs.
That is David Riley, the head coach of Wazzu. I will say the only concern that I might have for Cedric, if he might have the hankering to eat, it's a lot easier to eat better in Pullman, Washington than it is here in Memphis. Like, we don't want a Zion situation.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Guy's got pretty good food.
No, it sounds like he's got great food. I'm just worried
about it. I'm saying Memphis has got some pretty damn good food.
Yeah, no, we do. It's not good for you.
Oh, yeah.
It's delicious. Yeah. Like, yeah. I've noticed that there's usually a pretty big correlation between that. It's like, great places to eat is like not great for you. Like New Orleans, like you can go through it. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, Tim, because I told you that I knew, particularly on Grizzlies Twitter, Cedric was wildly popular. But, I mean, on Jeff's show yesterday, we put up a poll, like, do you approve of, like, it was simple yes or no. Are you in favor of the Grizzlies trading up to go get Cedric? And it was, like, 91.8%. And there's nothing on the internet that is wildly that popular. And, I mean, it's almost to the point where gambling brain kind of takes over, where I think you're wired the same way when you're, like, when it's this popular, it's, like, can it be real? Wait a minute here.
Well, and two, I mean, I remember, back on Tuesday, we were talking about how many people had, you know, the Grizzlies taking him at 16, and then, you know, would he be around until 16? And obviously, they didn't think he wouldn't have been. I think that's been reported by multiple people that said he would not have been available at 16. He would have been scooped up. I think the Thunder liked him at 15. Look, I'll say this. If the Oklahoma City Thunder are interested, he's probably a pretty darn good prospect. And I don't know, man. I mean, this is such a cool story, you know, to see his rise. And, you know, he quit AAU. He didn't like it. So it seems like everything about him is positive. And you just hope that is the case. I mean, dude, just go watch some of the highlights back. I mean, his stroke is just, it's what you want. It's just gorgeous. You know, it is a beautiful stroke. He's athletic. You know, and for this franchise, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you certainly know them much better than I do, but like getting a guy like him, it seems to fit who the Grizzlies are.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things here. Number one, the way that the season ends, obviously it's going to cause fan frustration. And, you know, most people, I think, were like, okay, well, can we just get some veterans? Can we get older? And that seemed to be a popular opinion. But it's almost like when people started learning about him, everyone was kind of okay with, all right, well, this is the way to do it. And Giannotto was talking with me yesterday, and he made this point. You know, Kleiman's not had a lot of success in terms of making trades that make the Grizzlies better. But where he really has had a lot of success, and particularly in comparison to other peers, is he Sam Presti? No. But he has had a lot of success finding his best players in the draft. And it almost felt like they came to the conclusion, a lot of these options of, okay, we can maybe attach Cole Anthony and some picks, but like, what are we going to get? They made the decision that the chance to get the best player was to do this. They targeted Cedric. They believe in Cedric. It was go up and get him. And I think that, to me, is what has attracted people is, okay, as frustrated as everyone was, if they've got a guy that they believe in, and I think it also helps that not only did they believe in him, but like, you know, he really was becoming the buzzy name. And I think it's a lot of like how Bears fans feel. Like you feel like as Bears fans, like they've gone and gotten the cheap coach for so long that when they finally like found out like, okay, Ben Johnson is taking us, like it's like everyone kind of gets on board. You know what I mean? When you get the buzzy name.
Well, and I'm not saying that, you know, Sam Vecenie is infallible. I'm sure he has plenty of misses. But, you know, to me, before even the Grizzlies drafted him, outside of, you know, my fascination that he started at a Division III school, which is more tongue in cheek, when I heard Russillo and Vecenie on like a straight up nerdy draft conversation that went on for like an hour gush over Cedric Coward and both of them loved him, to me that kind of tells me, all right, this kid's got some juice. And then obviously thoughts around the league are the same way. And you know, I go back to, I don't know if they would have, but it sounds like OKC was very interested if he was still there at 15.
So my old boss is very plugged in with the Thunder, and he firmly believes that they were going to take him. And like in the end, like this is when I mentioned to you, like what I'm just so sick of, like overpay. The Thunder and the Spurs were ahead of the Grizzlies. They had to jump them. That was going to cost something. You know
what
I mean?
Are people saying this is an overpay?
Oh yeah. Even Pelton, like Pelton is, and I really do like Kevin Pelton, but like I just think we've got to reevaluate the draft value chart. Like right. I just don't like in the end, all that matters, like you can have 15 picks, but you have to spend them. You know what I mean?
Well, and that was the weird thing about the Brooklyn Nets was like, really? They're just going to stick and pick five different dudes that don't really all seem to fit all that well together. But they thought, all right, so it was obviously 11 for 16, the 2028 first rounder of Orlando and 2 seconds. I don't know, man. That's not an overpay to me.
I mean,
Orlando's going all in right now. They're in theory, 2028, they're going to be pretty good, right? This isn't New Orleans being 21 and 61 and giving up an unprotected first next year.
an unprotected first swap, which not only could you be really bad,
or if Milwaukee,
like God forbid Giannis, something
if Giannis
happens,
gets
Giannis,
hurt,
that's
yes.
what I'm saying. Like Milwaukee could be one of the worst teams in the league if that
or,
happens.
Or which let's say, and I don't expect it because the East is pretty weak. However, to your point, if Giannis gets hurt. Also, what happened this year? A team with a 1% chance to get the number one pick got the number one pick. So let's say the Milwaukee Bucks are in the play-in and they don't get into the field of eight, right? They have a chance. And we just saw it with the Dallas Mavericks. And we saw it with the Spurs.
I think two of the last three lotteries have been won by teams with like under a 2% chance. Like, it's entirely possible. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get back into a little bit of the draft. We'll talk more of the coverage, but also talk about what we were just discussing right there. Teams that we liked, what was happening, teams we didn't like. We'll discuss that and more when we come back right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.